So I'm a student of Andrew Little at the University of Sussex, but I'm going to talk about work done at University of Cape Town with all these people over there, and some at the ICG in Portsmouth. And so we're going to we've done a project on detecting dynamics in dark energy. So what are our prospects for detecting dynamics? And particularly, we looked at the constraints coming from Big Bang nucleosynthesis, so the synthesis of the light elements that occurred shortly after Big Bang. So after Chaz gave his nice introduction, I should just go on immediately to the work, but I'll repeat some of the concepts, and if you don't understand something, let me know. So maybe you know that around 1998, we had this breakthrough in cosmology. The expansion, you know, the expansion of the universe is not slowing down, it's speeding up. It came from observations of supernovae. It came from two independent teams. And it was, some people said, some people were working at that time already, including some of the possibility of including a cosmological constant as contributing to the energy density of the universe. But for most of the community, it was a surprise. And later on, people went on to look at other measurements, other constraints. And even later on, we came with this cosmic triangle, which are evidence coming from three different types of experiments, all converging into a region of common confidence limits, which makes us very confident nowadays that we do indeed have a cosmological constant. So like Chess says, those three independent measurements would be the supernovae, clusters of galaxies, and the cosmic microwave background. Supernovae, like Chess says, the brightness. The brightness of supernovae is believed to be the same throughout the universe. And if you observe them to be dimmer, this would mean that they are farther away than we thought they were. Clusters, from clusters of galaxies, you can say, measure the X-ray fraction in the clusters of galaxies. And because these are the largest objects that are known to be gravitationally collapsed, we believe also that this X-ray fraction is constant. So if, as you measure this fraction, it will also be dependent on the distance, giving you again another indication of whether those clusters are farther away or closer by than you expect. And from the CMB power spectrum, these are the power spectrum is made of oscillations of baryons and photons, which are pulled together and pushed away by gravity. And the information on your cosmology is given by the position and the amplitude of the peaks, and these are very precisely measured by the WMAP data and also previous experiments. So that they also place strong constraints on the cosmology. So this convergence, like Chaz pointed, they all converge into a common region of confidence limits, giving you about a third of dark matter and two-thirds of dark energy constituting your cosmology. So nowadays, pretty much everybody believes that there's some energy with a negative pressure filling up the universe. We have no idea what it is. And basically, the important thing would be now to, okay, we don't know what it is. Can we say something about whether it's always been the same, it's always been there, or does it have some dynamics? Does it have some behavior with time that accounts for it being now relevant and causing acceleration? Both these possibilities have problems. So probably you've heard of this number 120. And why is it so small? Why is it now? Dynamics, it can give us some hint, connect to theory. You've got plenty of possibilities. Let it not be said that we don't have imagination in theory. And so I'll more or less describe what's happening with either one of them. With the cosmological constant, it's still the most plausible. all observations are still consistent with the pure vacuum energy equation of state minus one equation of state. Everybody knows what it is?
So I'll just write down over here, it's what connects the energy density to the pressure. This is more or less the simplest thing. And we, in studies of dark energy, we choose to parameterize our information many times on with an equation state, because when you don't, oh dear. Okay, so you're in. Exactly. So this is very useful when we don't know what is the underlying theory behind it. We know that it somehow is going to be connected to the pressure and the energy of your underlying theory. So we, if you don't know, like for example, the potential, what's causing the dynamics of the field, what have you, we parameterize in W. So it's what you're going to hear throughout the talk. So as I was saying, observations today consistent with a cosmological constant. It's also the only covariant description, so whatever you have other than lambda, it's not going to be covariant. And but it's also the most puzzling, and people really don't like this problem that it causes that I'm going to describe, and it's a drive enough to go on and look for dynamical behavior and all sorts of other theories. So if you have a zero-point energy for equations of the vacuum, we've got absolutely no prediction for what that value would be. For example, you've got ultraviolet divergence. If you then go on and say, okay, let's look for a cutoff, and for example, looking at the scales of phase transitions in the early universe, you come up with a value that it's got this number 120 orders of magnitude smaller than your energy scales would be that you look into. And so this quote over here by Sir Arthur Eddington, it says, well, it's also a good rule. If you don't know what's behind the observations, let us not believe in it just yet, which I think it's a little bit radical, but it tells us how strongly people feel about having to explain this value. Looking to dynamics, so it means that your the amount of dark energy present is changing with time. We've got countless possibilities. People have come up with nearly every explanation that you could. Change the CMB power spectrum. People at Oxford have been talking about having this glitch in the CMB power spectrum, which would account for acceleration. Change your gravity, like Chaz was saying over there. Gravity is modified at scales of order of our universe today, if we wanted to account for the acceleration. Change Copernico, saying the Copernican principle does not hold, like somebody was pointing over there. If we live in the center of a very large void of order, 150 megaparsecs, I think it's the value today, it means that we would watch everything pulling away from us, not because there's dark energy, but because we live in an under-dense region. And for example, another one, change the metric, departures from your homogeneity and isotropic freedom Robinson-Walker metric. If you've got small homogeneities, you've got like something that we call the back reaction accounting for your acceleration. So all these dynamics can solve, for example, why it is so small today. Sometimes it also solves why it's still fine-tuned, but this is more delicate. Another advantage is it can come from fundamental physics, so you can motivate your dark energy, your acceleration, what have you. And what we like very much is you can choose a scalar field, which is sort of the do-it-yourself for cosmology. It's good for time-varying quantities. People use it for time-varying constants, and there's also plenty of scalar fields around. Yeah, well, yes. No, I mean, but well, from the mental physics, if you've got to look at extensions of this kind of the standard.
You mean
model.
From the parts of theoretical
of
physics
theory,
that
yeah, yeah.
are not observed?
Yeah. No. I mean, that's I would be maybe in Norway presenting this talk if I had seen this kind of field. So
distinguishing between dynamics and the vacuum energy is what we're looking for. And if you talk about surveys, here are, I don't know if you've heard of these names, the ESSENCE project and the Hubble Space Telescope. This is a dark energy task force team, which is a team proposed by NASA. It's like a committee which is giving advice on how we're going to spend our money in dark energy. So all of these say it's important. What is important is to measure, for example, deviations from lambda at a redshift of about a half. Redshift, as Chaz was also saying, it's something that measures how much has your universe grown in size from the time that that light was emitted and today. So if you've got a larger redshift, for example, 1.3, it's further beyond in time than 0.2. It means that universe was even smaller at that time. So coming back again, the Hubble Space Telescope wants to measure how is W varying across this redshift over here, and these guys which are more or less dictating what's going to be done in dark energy for the next two decades are saying that the most important thing is we want to know how consistent are we with lambda, are we going to be in lambda in the future, and what is also the consistency with some time evolution of dark energy. Okay, so we in the work went on to look at Big Bang nucleosynthesis. What can you tell us?
Possible anisotropies, are people looking for those as well?
Small scale anisotropies. So,
or even in any redshift.
Well,
I mean, in.
Yeah, I have seen some work on that. So if I think if we are, as you know, isotropy is much more well measured than homogeneity. And if you place yourself slightly off center, if you say that, for example, we are close to the center of the universe, not exactly, we're slightly off center, so we don't observe perfect anisotropy, you could also count for observation for accelerations like that.
Well, no, I didn't mean it as an alternative explanation, but just in these experimental searches, you said they're looking for time dependence of lambda, but they can
also
look for homogeneous. Well, there's just more
contribution of dark energy to the cosmic microwave background.
No, he's. I think he wants, like, in this ANSAS which you take of the W, to measure W prime, do you take into account anisotropy? I don't think
No. I mean, the thing from the survey design point of view is real simple. You've got two parameters to go with. So if you want to propose anything, be it time varying, space varying, whatever, you can propose, but it's got only two parameters. What you propose for this equation state may only have two parameters. So if you want to, what they choose is to include time varying departures. You could also go to another, but you can't propose very complex form version because observations are very, very limited.
Okay, what can Big Bang nucleosynthesis tell us? The main difference between lambda and dynamics is that you may have had that dark energy present at earlier times. So contributing, I mean, a large fraction also at earlier times. And if you want to constrain what possible models you can have, you need to find a way to bring those limits down, or I mean, find a way to limit how much dark energy could you have had earlier on. This is today given by nucleosynthesis. So it's the nucleosynthesis is studied by the ratio of neutrons to protons. Earlier on, for example, 1 second after the Big Bang, you had some amount of protons, some amount of neutrons. And later on, as the universe expands and cools, you got those, some of those protons and neutrons forming, for example, helium. And as the temperature cools enough, you've got a freeze out of these interactions. And that freeze out is going to determine the expansion rate at that time. Once you've determined the expansion rate, you know you can put a bound on the amount of dark energy that you had at that time. And this group of people went on and bounded at a 2 sigma level to be at maximum 4% of the total amount of energy at that time. CMB, like I said, also can give some good constraints. It's slightly less powerful because it depends on the shape of the power spectrum, which is a little bit model dependent. So people don't take it as seriously. But later on, at around the temperature of 1 eV, you also had something similar, so an upper bound of only 4% to the contribution of dark energy that you could have had.
For helium-4 observations?
Sorry?
What kind of error bars do you assign to helium-4 observations?
No, this is not. I mean, this is known work by this group of people.
Well, what I'm going to say is in 2001, these error bars used to be tighter than they are now, because since then people realized there's a lot of systematic uncertainty goes into determining what's the primordial helium abundance is. And I suspect that might be over tight bound.
We have also considered those, but from what I understand, those are not very well confirmed yet. So, I mean, at least people in dark energy have not yet, it does not perspire that people are still using this bound to constrain the amount of dark energy at BBM.
You should not, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, I'll look into it. Let me just, this is the bounds that we considered.
Does that BBM bound include a lower bound too? I mean, how negative could omega dark energy be?
Negative?
Yeah, negative.
No, the omega dark energy is the amount of dark energy.
Yeah, but it could be either side. Right?
How could it be negative?
Let's just imagine we put in a negative.
Okay.
I can give you a story why it would be negative.
It's about on the expansion rate of it. If you make it too negative, then you're going to lie.
I know there must be some lower bound. I'm just wondering what is it?
Probably single lower.
I'm not so sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, this is, yes, I know that I've heard of this result recently that maybe that the limits aren't as stringent as these people initially thought. But the thing is, I mean, from what I understand, and I'm no specialist in it, it's also that this is still to be confirmed. So in this work, we chose to use this 4%, 5% limit. But we, as we're going to find out, this is already, even if we relax it a bit, the limits are also, our results are also going to be strong. So, BBN tells us about dark energy at the time of BBN, and somehow we've got to make it useful for us. We've got to find a way to connect it in order to be to give us something about how much dark energy we can have today. And we can do this by using scaling fields, which are scalar fields with a particular property that is they keep their energy fraction constant with respect of the amount of energy of the background, the amount of the energy that is dominating at that time. So, for example, over here, dark energy is the red line, and we choose, this is a simulation, we choose it at, it can be at any initial value that you like. It starts at any initial conditions, it begins to scale with the dominant energy at this time, which is radiation, here given by the blue line. Later on, we've got transition to matter over here, which is given by this black line. And the field is also scaling like matter scales. And then
if we wanted even later on to give acceleration today, we have to come up with a way for the field to leave the scaling behavior and to give us acceleration today. So this is also work done on many ways, and we're going to look at a particular model. But the interesting property is that it allows us to connect Go to BBN, given that saturated limit, it's for about 4%. And then we say, as long as the field is scaling, the fraction of dark energy remains constant. So we parameterize here redshift as transition, it's still 4%, so around over here. And then you can choose another type of model to make it give you acceleration today.
In this case, compared to the lambda?
So the potential, the initial conditions, it's very less dependent. So you achieve the scaling behavior from a wide range of initial conditions. If you then wanted to give it acceleration, for example, here or here, that is fine-tuned.
Such as we had in cosmological constant.
Yes. Yeah. So it's all something not.
I had another question. So isn't it true that the simple tracking models that you have, if you fix the equation of state to sufficiently close to -1 today, then it's actually very subdominant at early times?
No, you can find potentials that are
still high.
Yes.
So it's not just 1/5 to the alpha.
No. So that one that's actually slightly different. It's a tracking behavior, but the tracking is not exactly the same as scaling. But yeah, so they both have some problems, but people have come up by now with potentials that give you both subdominant at early times, and later on it comes to dominate and give you acceleration of problem.
But these are tracking solutions or
scaling solutions?
So you got a capping with
the. Yeah.
So what I'm a little bit worried about, probably I'm wrong, is that. Is that constraint still valid? Because all the dynamics change slightly, right? If they have a coupling, that method that can.
Sorry, you meant okay. No. So this is just dark energy, not coupled to matter. We just.
It's not coupled.
No. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. That way. You can take your
stencil. Something here. That approximates an exponential.
Yeah.
Why don't you show a few potential?
Because it's not coming just yet. Oh. So I'm going to first take something which is simpler.
Sorry, this is also mimics the rescaling of the genial compact.
The what?
You can also achieve something like this, but just by changing your Planck mass, right? So
changing the Planck mass.
Because if that's constant, then I can always redefine my Friedmann equation in a way that genius has changed
exactly
on larger scale.
Yeah, but I mean, you're talking about some varying constants, right?
Right.
Yeah. but this doesn't. I mean, this is pretty much more simpler than all that. This is given by normally it's an exponential potential that is given this behavior, and you only have to change this exponential if you want it to give you acceleration later on. But normally it's not even no varying constants. It's just considering a scalar field, a canonical scalar field. And,
no, what I'm saying is that the two are equivalent. This type of models is equivalent of having Newton constant different on larger scale than what it is on a smaller scale.
I suppose you could.
You can get constraint. Larger scale.
I suppose so, but I mean, even in any situation, that's not what we're doing now. So we just consider the scalar field. Okay, so this is just to show you more or less what's happening. We take a big bang nuclear synthesis over here on the y-axis. You've got the omega dark energy, the amount of dark energy that you have. So you take it to be constant all the way until it transitions to acceleration. And then depending on the model that you choose, you're going to have a departure from the matter-dominated era at different times. So you're going to have dynamics of detect dark energy at different times. And we're going to look at several values of the potential, the parameters of the potential for this. So this is the work. What we, all our assumptions are, number one, we've got, you take BBN, and you take the fields to be scaling from BBN all the way until transition. And then we can, after dark energy starts to dominate, we take three different possibilities. The first is just a toy model. So we've got a sharp transition, this is the equation of state, from the equation of state of matter, which is W equals zero, transits sharply to a vacuum constant. And let's look at what BBN and the scaling field are saying in this event. This is the potential that I was mentioning. It gives, this part gives subdominant dark energy at early time, so you can have matter dominating, radiation dominating. This part gives the acceleration at late times, so dark energy comes to dominate. And lastly, we're going to look at the phenomenological approach. So like I said, we don't know what are the dynamics behind. We don't know what is causing, how, what is dark energy, is it scalar field, what is it? And take a parameterization for W, and let's look at what constraints we're going to get. And because nowadays, choosing the parameterization for W is very important. The constraints that are obtained are heavily dependent on the parameterizations that you choose. So this is quite a sensitive issue within the community. And we've chosen to take a very famous form for W that I'm going to show you later on. Again, this is what's happening behind, sorry for the equation. So the fraction of dark energy is given by that this part over here on the denominator is just the total amount of dark energy. On the top is the evolution of dark energy. We saturate it with the BBN limit and consider the equation to be valid at transition to dark energy. The behavior of dark energy is encapsulated here in the equation of state, which enters in this function f, giving you the evolution. We put it over there and then obtain some constraints.
Maybe I didn't understand what you were saying. So the physics hypothesis is that somewhere between Big Bang nuclear synthesis and now there's a phase transition in the vacuum resulting
in... So when I talk about transition, it's just transition from the dark matter dominated era to acceleration, which we think happened in not so long ago.
But behind this, is there some idea that there is a phase transition or something like that?
No. I mean, it all starts, the furthest away that we need to consider is Big Bang nuclear synthesis. So any phase transitions that you can include, like at the scale of the mass, the Planck mass scale, would have had to happen before inflation or around the time of inflation. But in order to derive these constraints, we don't need to go anywhere near that far. We just need to have a scalar field present around BBN, around that time, and have it scaling, and that's all.
So basically, you're just inventing phenomenologically a scalar field potential for a scalar field to roll in, so that now this component of the energy density is dominant and the Big Bang nuclear synthesis.
Yeah. I mean, that's the interest on this work. It's because we wanted to say as little of the underlying model as possible. What we're trying to derive is saying how are we going to detect dynamics? Is it easy? Dynamics as in, we don't have a cosmological constant. We have some behavior in the field. So we want to know, is it easy to detect or not? If we make our model very specific, then it's going to be, the results are going to be weaker because they're going to be more model dependent.
So it's a way to say the problem somewhere, however you do this, somewhere in the potential or in that transition function, there's a physical scale, and which is a new physical scale, which is somewhere, you know, between the energy density of your 4% of et cetera at Big Bang nuclear synthesis.
Okay.
Now, somewhere there's a physical scale, and the question is, can you detect by some other means this physical scale?
So no, that is part of the simulation. I didn't include that in order not to make it very specific. Let's see if I know it. Okay, over here. So this one of these masses over here has got to be fine-tuned in order to give a 70% today of the dark energy model. But I mean, of course, that's a normalization. You can put it if you want to have 2/3 today. You put when you're doing the simulation for the fields, you set the mass to be that one. Okay. So first, I don't know how much time I have. This is the first results. So like I said, it's just a toy model. And this is basically what's happening with the equation of state, but we make it really drastic. It's zero during matter, during dark matter. It changes sharply to a cosmological constant. This is the assumption. So encoded over here. And we say today it resembles largely a vacuum energy with n equals minus 1. And this is the value for the transition that we have. So if you were a cosmologist, you would know immediately this is very, very high. I mean, people are looking. Is this true?
That's
right. So people, dark energy, the probes, the surveys are looking into redshifts of about a half to one, more or less. So what with these simple assumptions and this simple model, we are already saying this is very high, and we're not going to be able to detect any dynamics, any transition to dark energy if we're looking with our probes within the next decade. On the other hand, if we change the assumptions and say, okay, we want transition to happen at around redshift equals one, this is very phantom. It's an equation of state smaller than minus one, which means that it's phantom energy with negative total energy density. Yes, yes. But I mean, because this is the simplest thing, of course you can choose it to have a sharper transition, wider, or, but more or less this is what happened in the broader picture. So it's got to resemble this, and this is like back of the envelope calculation if you do it. So double exponential potential. Like I said, it gives you acceleration later on and tracking behavior earlier on. And what is happening over here is that, also like I said, it's behaving like radiation first. So here, equation of state of the third, then it transits to matter, giving you equation of state of zero. And depending on this parameter mu of the potential, you've got to get exit from the scaling regime and giving you an oscillating W, or a more smooth transition for W. But they all leave the scaling regime and give you acceleration today. So we want to look at this potential because it's very famous, or it's quite normally taken, and we want to examine what is our ability to detect deviations from lambda. Again, this is just the same behavior for W. And over here, the important thing is to see that in order to detect a deviation from lambda CPM, which is over this line over here, we need to go very far away today from W equals minus one. So it's already close. We need to have this line over here, and it's close to the two sigma boundary, so the allowed limits for W today. And if in this case, then it will be detectable with stage four experiments. So stage four, the dark energy task force, they divide all the probes that we have that have occurred, that we have now, or that are planned for the future. They call them by stage one, which are the past ones, up to stage four, which are in two decades, more or less. So those are going to be very, very sensitive. But even those will only detect dynamics, so give us some hint that we don't have a cosmological constant if we are almost outside the boundaries for the value of W today.
another way to look at it is with the Hubble rate. So take the Hubble rate that is given by your dynamical model and consider the fraction to the Hubble rate given by the cosmological constant and look how it behaves. So over here, we have, if it is larger than one, it means that the dynamical dark energy has a larger Hubble rate. And if you look at deviations from lambda then, you're gonna have, this is the highest point over here, but it's only for models, like I said, very different from cosmological constant today. And if you say, okay, let's only look at models that have a value smaller than this one, and then you have maximum deviation from lambda of 2.7. And so it's not gonna be detected with the experiments that we have. So this is the parameterization that I was talking about. It's called the Chevalier-Pulaski-Linder. And I don't know if you heard of this W0, W0, WA plane, which is what everybody is talking about when they give constraints. And the question that you made on the previous talk, the constraints are heavily dependent both on the way that you parameterize it. So if you parameterize it in just in Z or another variable, and people normally take this variable over here, which is 1 minus A. If you were to take a Taylor expansion for your behavior of W, this is slightly better because it's always smaller than 1, whereas Z, it can be anything. So it's, as a Taylor expansion, is not very, very good. So this is very famous. It gives you a sort of, it can account a little for the kink potential. So it gives you a wider range of dynamics. Anyway, the surveys are using for presenting constraints, and most importantly, the Dark Energy Task Force report is basing its figure of merit on this this parameterization. So they evaluate how good is a survey going to be, what's its constraining power based on this plane over here, W0, WA. So they take the ellipse and say, well, if the ellipse is smaller, the predicted ellipse for your experiment, like let's say, if the ellipse is smaller, your experiment is going to be larger. If it's going to be more constraining, if it's larger, then your experiment's not as powerful. And what we found is that simply by taking the nucleosynthesis constraints plus a scaling field, this parameterization is not able to take your value of the amount of dark energy from its small value during matter, or so it will, that would be around 5% consistent with BBN, all the way up until to make 2/3 of the total energy that we have today. So because it's not, let me just choose. Because it's not very flexible, okay, it's only got two parameters, so I don't know if there was going to be something that would be much more flexible. But with only two parameters, its maximum value would be the sum of the two parameters, and it only reaches W equals zero asymptotically. So W equals zero is what we wanted to reach if we want to meet the matter era. And so if we see over here, it's not going to be able to bring the value of dark energy up from 2/3 up until the 5%. And these curves over here are for the double exponential potential, which also has less parameters, and it's able to bring the amount of dark energy from its high value. Okay, so that is enough, I think. Scaling fields are among the best alternatives to lambda because they can give you varying behaviors, and they are well motivated from particle physics. Big bang nucleosynthesis constraints also gives you strong limits on your behavior and also on the amount of dark energy that you can have today. The detectability in deviations from the Hubble rate is certainly not guaranteed, and you have to push your limits to the boundaries if you want to guarantee deviations from lambda CDM within the next decade, one decade or two. The standard parameterization, the CPL parameterization, is not working if you take Vivian into account. And it's very important because if you choose to base your to evaluate your experiments based on this parameterization, you may be biasing your results away from scaling quintessence models. That's it.
A lot of the various parameterizations which are in the literature at the moment. So are there any experiments in the next couple of years which we think will constrain some of them?
Sorry, you've got to...
They may be, like in the literature if we see, like there are various kinds of parameterizations which are done for this omega as a function of z.
Omega as a function of z, yeah.
Yeah. So are there any upcoming experiments like in the next couple of years or so, like which will rule out at least some of them, or what is the state?
I mean, a parameterization is not giving you predictions. It's what you can rule out is values of the of your parameters within this parameterization. So my point was more that your constraints are going to be dependent on the way that you choose to present your constraints on. So you should be able to choose at least consider more than one parameterization, and not like people are doing only considering one throughout that is not even meeting all the constraints that we have available. But experiment surveys will not rule out. I mean, of course, if you've got a very strict parameter form for your W, it can rule out. But what you do is rule out regions of values within for your parameters of that form. Is that okay?
And for another quick question, maybe. So
I know if I measured something that was different than minus one for W, but I couldn't be a cosmological constant.
Yeah.
But looking at the graphs, it seems like in these models you can get things that are very, very close to the behavior of a cosmological constant.
Yeah.
How accurate of the measurement of W would you have to have? How close would you have to measure to minus one before you would say, well, these models are ruled out? Or is there no way to disprove them?
How satisfied would you be? So that depends on how. I mean, I've heard people that saying, I will be convinced if you give me a 99% detection. Some people are happy with 68. I mean, I know what you're asking, and I ask myself the same question. But I think that is a trend within the community. Sometimes most of the community will be satisfied if you have like a two sigma detection. I think it's more or less 95% detection. But you will always have some people. Okay.
Well, I mean, something a little bit different. So I mean, if we measure W of minus 0.999, plus or minus 0.002, say. Or something like that. I mean, would you say, okay, I don't think it could be a scalar field, it's got to be a cosmological constant? Or would you say that there's still a corner of parameter space, which is...
Would I say personally?
Yeah.
I think I would be satisfied with that. But, I mean, I'm definitely not an experimentalist, so my train of thought is people think differently about that. Yeah, please.
Let me come back to your quote from Eddington. Begin, okay?
From what?
You may have this quote from Eddington.
Yeah.
Okay, so following up on this question, I mean, supposing that you saw something that was a few sigma away from W equals minus one. Yeah. Let me give you...
Today.
Today. Uh-huh. Okay, and going back, okay? So you have these various classes of models, and they have a bunch of parameters in them. And as a particle physicist, the parameters in those models are totally I don't know what the right word is, absurd for parameters that should be in the potential for a scalar field theory. I mean, you can't rely on supersymmetry. Supersymmetry is certainly broken way off that scale. There's nothing that you can rely on to keep the parameters of a scalar field fine-tuned to tens of orders of magnitude away from particle physics scales, except fine-tuning itself.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's no possible theoretical explanation for what you would be seeing.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of that could underlie the models. I mean, so what I'm saying is the from a particle physics point of view, the models are absurd. So why would you take seriously
any dark energy model at this point, though?
Yeah. No, but it's interesting to listen because we don't normally get this your input. You know, normally what's written in the literature is, and I don't know enough particle physics to know whether it's really that motivated or not. But what we hear in the literature is that quintessence models are the closest to give you an underlying explanation for the behavior of dark energy. And of course, if you now tell me, okay, it's not even closer to having any grounds in what we think in particle physics, I totally would agree with you. But this is still the best that people have come up with so far. And I didn't propose a scanning field myself, I wish I had. But they are very successful in terms of alternatives to dark energy, because people seem to think that it does give you a stronger link to the underlying physics than.
But look at what you'd be doing. What you'd be doing is claiming to measure the existence of a scalar field whose potential has a dimensional scale, you know, on the order of inverse megaparsecs.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And which has no possible relation to anything that could come out of, I mean, you know, the most important lesson from gauge theories in particle physics is that fundamental scalar fields are unnatural. The only hope for them is supersymmetry, and we know that supersymmetry, if it exists at all, is broken way above the scale you're talking about. So.
Yeah, but are you happier then with the cosmological constant and fine tuning that?
I'm not happy at all.
But if you were working on this field, what would your approach be then? I mean,
something much more radical.
I just suggest we are running out of time. I'm sorry.
Sure.
And let's postpone this to a later conversation with the Bistro expert.